The message you are about to hear is brought to you by Art Bradick. And now, Mr. Bradick.
Thank you, Mr. Moore. Let's go ahead and go over to Exodus 32. I name this generation as the I don't know generation. To me, there's no question that America is exceptional in this world. The founders were all well-read, even if they didn't have higher education. They still were well-read. They knew the failures of the past that happened in Europe and their history. And it was their desire to design a different government. It was going to be one that was fair. It was going to be a government in which people were most important, a government in which people would have certain rights. And they wrote a constitution that, to me, when I read it, is second only to the Bible. It is beautifully written, and it is so profound in its beauty. And in its laws, it gives the people freedom from their government. But it seems fashionable today to not know what it says. It's fashionable. We had a health bill proposed, and they didn't know what was in it. Now, you're talking about a number of congressmen and senators, and Nancy Pelosi said, we have to pass it because we don't know what's in it. What are they thinking about? You understand? I don't know, and they're proud of it, and they're saying, pass it because we don't know? What kind of thinking is going on today? You know, the IRS targeted the president's opponents. And those who were involved were questioned. And Congress wanted to know, why did this occur? Why did you do this? Do you know what the IRS leadership said? I don't know. I just found out about it. I don't know anything about it. We created a fast and furious scheme, and we were then sending guns down free to a certain cartel in Mexico. And finally, one of our people was shot as a result of it. And the government reported that they just lost track of all these guns. And when questioned about it, Eric Holder said this, I don't know, I just heard about it. I don't know. And then he said, I plead the fifth. So he must have known something. When someone pleads the fifth, that means that they are not going to say it because it would incriminate them. You know, when questioned about it, he said he had only heard about it. Hillary Clinton was questioned about Benghazi by Paul Rand. She said she didn't know that a generator was bought for hundreds of thousands of dollars and put in one of the consulates. She didn't know about it. She said she didn't know that they had spent $100,000 and more for three clowns to go to India and represent America. She didn't know that Turkey was selling weapons through Syria, and a cable was sent to Hillary Clinton on October of 2012 that said the Benghazi consulate could not sustain an attack, and they asked for reinforcements way before it ever happened. Later, she said, I just didn't know about it. It never came to my attention. No one ever told me. I didn't know anything about it. And she didn't have any idea why the requests for more security were denied. I just don't know. Congress questioned the Federal Bank. It's on YouTube if you want to go watch it. It's just fascinating how they're explaining that $9 billion disappeared and they can't find it. And they're asking them, well, what happened? And, well, they don't know. They're doing a review on it. Well, what happened to this money that went someplace? Well, we're reviewing that, too. And he said, well, are you doing an investigation on this? Well, we'd prefer not to call it an investigation. We would rather call it a review. And so the review had been going on for over a year with no answers. I don't know. 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 It was said over and over again. This nation, the people of Israel today in the modern day are following the same kind of example that ancient Israel followed in the Bible. You know, they knew what God said. They knew it. And they understood, he did, understood they would have a tendency to forget. It's just human, isn't it? It's human to forget. You want to remember the things that you want, but the things someone else wants of you, it's just easier to forget. So I want you to, for a moment, consider Aaron and the golden calf here. Moses had been gone a long time in the mountain. The people did not know what had happened to him. Exodus 32, verse 21. Exodus 32 and verse 21. And Moses said unto Aaron, what did this people unto you that you've brought so great a sin upon them? I mean, what, did they threaten you? Were you somehow tortured? What was it that allowed you to do this? And Aaron said, let not the anger of my Lord wax hot. You know the people, that they're set on mischief. It's their fault, right? Not my fault. You know, for they said unto me, make us gods which shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man that brought us out of the land of Egypt, we don't know what's become of him. And it's just so hard for people to admit that they made a mistake and did something wrong. And people will make up the most bizarre excuses sometimes. But the one of our age, it's this. I don't know. I mean, can't you hear a politician's voice coming out of Aaron? You know, I can. Well, you know, I don't. This happened, you know, and they threw in this gold and out came this calf. How did that happen, you know? I mean, I don't know. You know? So anyway, God warned us about forgetting him. This is not, you know, I'm making fun of something because it's absolutely so silly, this whole way that we rule and we don't know what we're doing, and that's our excuse, which should be something that we would fear. If I told my boss, when I was working in air conditioning, I didn't know, he'd want to know exactly why. And I probably wouldn't last there very long at all. So let's go over to Deuteronomy 8, because there God warns us about forgetting him in verses 7 through 10. For the Lord your God brings you into a good land, a land of brooks of water, of fountains and depths that spring out of the valleys and the hills, a land of water and barley and vines and fig trees and pomegranates, a land of olive oil and honey, a land wherein that you shall eat bread without scarceness, that you won't lack anything in it, a land whose stones are like iron and out of whose hills you can dig brass. Imagine that. The land he gave them. And then he said in verse 10 something very important. When you have eaten and you are full, you shall bless the Lord your God for the good land that he's given thee. And then he says this. And man, I want us to remember this and all the things we have. You know, in today's world, everybody seems rich by comparison. And people have so much in their homes. There isn't a home that I don't go into that doesn't have a big screen HD TV, except my own, of course. Antiquated. But the point is we have so much, and God has given us. You have to admit, you know, they came out here, there was 3 feet of topsoil. Other people have 3/8 of an inch of topsoil in other countries. We have every kind of mineral. We have every kind, we have all enough oil that we don't need to ever go to the Arab. We have everything. He's given us everything that you could possibly ever want. And then he says this in verse 11. But beware that you forget not the Lord your God, in not keeping his commandments and his judgments and his statutes, which I command you this day, unless when you have eaten and you're full and you've built goodly houses and dwell therein, and when your herds and your flocks multiply and the silver and gold is multiplied and all that you have is multiplied, then your heart be lifted up and you forget the Lord your God, which brought you forth out of the land of Egypt from the house of bondage. Man, to me, that's exactly what has happened. We have so many beautiful homes. I mean, these homes right over here, $300,000. They're absolutely gorgeous. People have ranches. They have all kinds of things today. Jewelry and gold and so much. And we think we did it on our own. We've completely forgotten where it came from. We've forgotten God in all of this. So let's go to Deuteronomy 17. God has blessed us with incredibly beautiful crops, with minerals in the hills. We're not lacking anything. You can't think of one single thing this country lacks except character. You can't find anything. We have everything here. We lack nothing. And he knew that the people were going to want to be like the rest of the world. And in chapter 17 and verse 15, he knew that that pull would come on them eventually, that they would want to have a king. And so anyway, in verse 15, he says this, "You shall in any wise set him king over you, whom the Lord your God shall choose. One from among your brethren shall you set king over you, that you may not set a stranger over you, which is not your brother." This is the first thing that we decided to take from the Bible. You know, almost all the principles of American law come right from this book, and this is one of them. You have to be born in America, you have to grow up in America, and you have to live the way the people you're going to rule. It just makes perfect sense to do this. And he said, you've got to do it. And this is one of the premises that we adopted. But he says here in verse 16, "He shall not multiply horses to himself, nor cause the people to return to Egypt, to the end that he should multiply horses, for as much as the Lord has said to you, you shall henceforth return no more that way. I pulled you out of there and you never go back." And so the king isn't to multiply horses so that he has soldiers stationed everywhere and the citizens of the country are scared to death to make a move because he's got all these people on horses, and he's not to have that. He's not to depend on that. And he wasn't to go to Egypt to buy horses either, not to trade with them or go with them. But do you remember how Judah was relying on Egypt when they were attacked by Babylon? Do you remember we went through that? And they went to Egypt, and Egypt failed them. And then when Babylon took them over, what did they do? What did the survivors do? Jeremiah said, "Don't go to Egypt." Where'd they go? Egypt. What do you think they'd say if you asked them, "Why'd you do that?" I don't know. Cut me. I don't know. So even Jeremiah had told them directly right at that time. They didn't have to remember this verse. Jeremiah told them, "Here's what God said, don't do it." And they did it anyway. They refused to do what he said. And 17:17, "Neither shall he multiply wives to himself, that his heart turn not away, neither shall he greatly multiply to himself silver and gold." Boy, those are just such good advice. Today, the lobbying business is one of the biggest businesses going. And I remember there was one of the congressmen was talking about how bad government is. And he said, one man he knew entered government 1 year and came out the other end with $100 million. $100 million. Lobbying. I'll vote for whatever you want. Just pay me enough and I'll do it. You can have me, you know. It's like prostitutes. It's what they become like, you know. But this is exactly what Solomon did, isn't it? Don't multiply wives to yourself. He had 700 wives and he had 300 concubines. And so a wife was someone you gave a contract to, and a concubine was somebody who was of a lower level than you and you couldn't marry him because their status wasn't high enough. And many times women would be open to this because parents would be open to it, even because the king would provide financial security to them. And so 300 of those babies, you know, he had, you know, besides the 700. You know, it's just amazing. Anyway, Deuteronomy 17, 18. And it shall be, when he sits on the throne of his kingdom, that he shall write him a copy of the law in a book out of that which is before the priests and the Levites. And it shall be with him, and he shall read therein all the days of his life, all the days of his life, that he may learn to fear the Lord his God and to keep all the words of this law and these statutes and do him, that his heart be not lifted up above his brethren, and that he turn not aside from the commandment. And just for a second, think about this. This is what the king was not to do. He was to read this book, and it was to keep him humble, that he didn't think he was above the brethren. Just apply that to the ministry today. Apply it to the ministry today. Are they one of us, or are they one of them? Because when I was ordained an elder, I asked the minister, I said, well, what do I do now? And he says, you're not one of them anymore, Art. You're now in an elite club. What? You understand? Read the book. Be humble. That's what it says. So don't go aside from the commandment to the right or the left, to the end that he may prolong his days in his kingdom, and that he and his children in the midst of Israel. Jeremiah 2. But you get the point here that he is saying that you've got to read this book. You have to make a copy of it. You know, I first came in the Church of God, you know what I used to do? Because I have a bad memory. But I know that writing something down helps you memorize things better. And so I began to make my own, I would reword the things in my own words, you know, take a piece of paper or a notebook and write it, so that I could remember where it was. And I'll never forget, I was so excited the day that I knew that the commandments were in Exodus 20 and Deuteronomy 5. I went, yes, because I actually knew where it was, you know. But before that, there were months before I ever came to that understanding, you know. So anyway, we're going over here to Jeremiah now. Jeremiah 2. So it's just happening time and time again is my point, you know, that we say we don't know, and yet we've been taught. And God says, look, read in the book, write a copy of it, and then read it every single day so that you will stay on track. Things won't get in your head that you think you are somebody and you forget God. And so anyway, in Jeremiah, I think it's really funny how this works, you know. Jeremiah 2 and verse 32. Jeremiah 2 and verse 32. Can a maid forget her ornaments? Now, anybody who's married here, I want you to think about this. You know, we have special, beautiful drawers, you know, and highly polished and nice. And there are places to put their jewelry, and they have this one here and this one here. They know exactly where it is, you know. They know exactly where it is. May not know where the broom is or the mop. They, you know, exactly where that jewelry is. Can a maid forget her ornaments or a bride her attire? Yet my people have forgotten me days without number. Man, I know when women are getting married and they put so much effort into it and they get these bride books and they look through them and they see, you know, they just have this picture and this image of what they want to look like and how beautiful they're going to be. And it's such an important event and it's just big in their minds. But we forget God. We forget God. You know, so here we have a commandment or to write out of the book of the law and to study it every day. And there was a reason for this. You know what the reason was? So that he couldn't say, I don't know. You know, get your nose in that book and learn it so that you don't say this. But look at how it happened, starting with our first king in Israel, Saul. He didn't read God's book, and he didn't know what was in it. And It continued on with Solomon. Here's the wisest human being on the earth, and he doesn't remember that God said, don't marry a bunch of women. Don't have a bunch of horses. You know, don't go to Egypt. And so he's marrying all these people for political reasons, and it's taking him off track so that he's forgetting what God has said. And then there was Ahab, who is the king of Israel, and he marries the priestess of Baal, the actual priestess of Baal. He marries her. Jezebel was her name. And it leads him completely off of God's way, and he's like forgotten God's way completely, and he's now worshiping Baal, and he is fighting against any of the prophets that God sends to him to get him to do the right thing. So what is happening to us today? Hebrews 13. You know, again, we see this in the history, and the history is written for us to learn from and to see the mistakes they made so that we won't make them, so that we will know the which way to go, what kind of decisions to make, and when and how to make them. But think about what is taking place today. You and I are scheduled, designed, hand-picked to become kings and priests in the world tomorrow. You and I ought to be writing out what the law of God says. We ought to write it out, and we ought to study it every day. But, you know, it's really funny how we remember everything that we care about. It's just so funny. My boss in air conditioning, I'd never seen anything like it. This guy, I could call him in, and he would tell me what job it was. He would tell me the model number of the compressor, whether it was a Train or a Carrier or a York or a Day and Night. No matter what that machine was, he knew the model numbers of it. It was like, bang, he just thought about it all the time, and it was what was always on his mind. But there was something he didn't think about, and that was verse 16 of chapter 13. And that was to do good and to communicate, forget not. Now, this word communicate doesn't mean talk. The word communicate means to give to others, to share with others. For with such sacrifices, God is well pleased. Well, you know what's happening here is that God intends for those that are bosses to share and to give to others, you know. But in our business dealings today, it's get the dust off the top of their heads. It's get all you can get and give back as little as possible. Business is about making money. And people will tell you, you know, and I've had best friends that had arguments in business and split up, who were partners. And you know what they said? It's just business. No, it's life. This is life, and this is how we live life, that we help one another. We don't just dump somebody because they're an extra, drain on our money that we could have for ourselves, you know. It's all about making money, and the pressure is so high. We live in a community that suffers from strokes. We suffer from heart attacks. We suffer from emotional breakdowns, because competition is so great and the pressure is so great on us, and we're getting ulcers and we're getting all these things. And the reason is because we're striving so hard to get money, and companies are trying to go ahead and out of three people, they'll let one go and they'll say, oh, okay, we'll have these two, we'll do the same work, you know. And it's getting so hard for people to do that they're rushing all the time. They're not happy with their work, and they're not doing the best jobs they could do. They're not really trying for quality and craftsmanship and everything in their work. They're trying to get it done. Or as my company used to say, get it billed. Get it billed. Don't worry about the job. Get it billed. Get that paperwork in the mail. That's what they cared about. And it's just tragic to me that because, you know, it makes life so that it's not fun. So I was in the reserves, and I remember going to a meeting, and I was talking to a lieutenant, and he was telling me he just started this new business, you know, and it was a really great business. I said, "What is it?" He says, "Well, I'm cleaning schoolrooms, and I've designed this cart that they pull, and they don't ever do the whole room at once. They just pull the cart, and they do what's on the left side as they go down, and then the next day they come in and do what's on the right side. But you understand, if you never have a job that you can walk away and look at it and say, that looks good, that's nice, you know, I did a good job here, I'm proud, you know, and God loves it too when we do a good job for him. But you understand, they just want you to do a piece at a time, do as little as possible, give as little as possible, take as much money out of the system as you can. And so we have teachers making $78,000, you know, they go on strike because it's not enough, and they're only working nine months out of the year. But it's just becoming a crazy world that we are suffering terribly, and that nobody knows why. Nobody has an answer, but we know the answer, you know. So anyway, this is a principle we need to, I think, take very seriously in terms of our study of the Bible. And our career is not air conditioning. Our career is not OT. Our career is not, you know, being an RN. It's not being a welder or anything like that. Our career is the kingdom of God. And that's what we're supposed to be putting our effort into that. Everything else is secondary to it. You understand what I'm getting at? But we switch it up all the time and put other things first and put it in a back burner. And there is a principle that we should, in this particular case about giving, we should learn. And it was, remember, Ford was making his Model T automobile, and he was paying his people twice as much money as any other car dealer or car manufacturer. And the newsmen came to him, and they interviewed him. And they said, "How can you possibly do this? You're paying your men twice what the other companies are paying their men." And he said, "Oh, no." He says, "Those guys are working twice and more for. They're making a better car, and they're working twice as hard, and they're twice as loyal and more." And that's the way it is. When you give to others, they will give back. And it's a whole different community. And you think when the kingdom, what it's going to be like. It's going to be people giving to one another and helping one another. That's the right way to live. And it makes life worth living, you know. But they've just come down to what we call them was bean counters, you know. They didn't care, and they wouldn't be loyal to our company. And we'd serve them sometimes 10 years faithfully. And they wouldn't be loyal if they got a cheaper price, you know. Anyway, people read the Bible back then. And most, or many, let me put it that way, many of the industrialists carried at least a book of Proverbs that they displayed on their desk. And the reason was they knew those Proverbs were good, solid advice for relationships and also for business. This is the way it works best. And so they used to read that. And generosity in work always results in loyalty coming back to you. Loyalty will always come back, and a desire to work hard. And today they try to squeeze as much as they can out of people, and then they expect dedication to them and good work. You know, and what's happening is people instead are vandalizing the companies. They are stealing from the companies. And I remember I went to buy pipe once, and the guy told me, he said, "Look, Art," he said, "I could hire another guy if they'd stop stealing the copper in this piping business, you know, but they're all stealing the copper. Well, why don't you pay them a little better so you don't think they have to steal, you know?" I mean, some people might just steal because they have this tendency or something. You know, but most people don't. If you have a good relationship with your employer, you know, it's not going to happen. They're going to help you. They're going to warn you when things are going bad, you know, but they're trying to squeeze as much as they can out of each person. And so now we have people who get a job, and they take the job to get the experience to put on their resume to get a better job. They could care less about the company. They should, you know, my grandfather worked the same place his whole life. He worked the same place his whole life. You know, he knew everybody there. They all knew him. They knew he did a good job. And he goes paid decent. And you know, they got by and they had a house and a car and all that stuff. And they were much, much happier people in those days. So when you ask the managers why they take this approach that they do of making people work harder and giving them less, what do you think their answer is? It's business. Or I don't know. You know. So anyway, let's go back to Deuteronomy in 31. Deuteronomy 31. He gave the book, Moses did, to all the elders and to the priests, as well as the king. Deuteronomy 31 and verse 9 and through 13. And Moses wrote this law, and he delivered it unto the priests, the sons of Levi, which bear the ark of the covenant of the Lord, and unto all the elders of Israel. And so look, this is something that's like a long time ago, and you think, how does it apply to us? Do you understand the elders were really important people then? These were the top of the strata of society, priests, Levites, kings. And he's telling them, you guys read this book, you know. And Moses commanded them, saying, at the end of every 7 years, in the solemnity of the year of release, in the Feast of Tabernacles, when all Israel is come together before the Lord your God in the place which he shall choose, you shall read this law before all Israel in their hearing. Gather the people together, men and women and children, and the stranger that's within your gates, that they may hear, that they may learn, and fear the Lord your God, and observe and do all the words of this law. And what's the reason? That their children, which have not known anything, may hear and learn to fear the Lord your God as long as you live in the land where you go over the Jordan to possess it. That, to me, is wisdom. And we do that. And I think next year, don't we do it? Isn't that? Yeah, I think it's next year. We talked about that before. But we do that every 7 years. We read the law. And we still have sermons and so on. But we read the law because it's a very good reminder, just like we do readings, to read the law and expound on it. And that's what the people did when they came back out of Babylon. Ezra and Nehemiah built a sort of stand, and they read the law to the people so that everyone would know. The children would know, the adults would know, the plain workers would know, the important people, the elders and the priests and everybody would know what is in this book and what are its rules and what works and what doesn't work. God only gave those things for our benefit. He's not trying to somehow keep us down. He's trying to make sure we're healthy and happy and that things work together and we're successful. And so every 7 years they were to read this law. And the only people I ever saw do it in the Bible was Ezra and Nehemiah. But today few people, that is, know what the law is. You know, for example, in our community that we work in, when the government gave a stimulus to GM, no one knew the government was not allowed to do this, that it's against the law for them to get into private enterprise. No one knew that the bankruptcy law says where the money goes. It goes to the investors. Well, we gave it to the unions because we favored them. No one said anything because they just didn't know. Nobody knows. I got an email showing Congress, and there they were, a man speaking down there. Just a few people were in the room, and they were playing video games, solitaire, you know, or some other kind of game on their computers. You know, they're being paid to pay strict attention to what's going on and know they're going to be voting on this. Or they can just put, like one man did, a present, 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 present. You know who I'm talking about. No one seems to know what the law is. No one seems to know. when Judah was in Babylon, you know, it's funny to me, they picked up certain traditions. And I've, you know, over the years, I've asked these Jewish people, why do you wear a yarmulke? And they say, we wear it to show, you know, God that we're under his submission, you know. Really? Well, that's what they wore in Babylon. That's what the priests wear in the Catholic Church. You know, they got it from when they were in Babylon. And the calendar is very similar there. And so God says the months are first month, second month, third month, fourth month, and so on. And so the first month was the beginning of year, the year. It was in spring, and it was like the Canaanite calendar, and they called it, when they used a name, they called it Abib, you know. But then when they were in Babylon, the first day of the new year was Tishri. So they brought that with them, but they didn't know exactly what to do with it. So they finally said, well, okay, in the spring, the first month will be a sacred year, the beginning of the sacred year, and then we'll have the secular year. And if you think about it, that's when most of our companies are doing their inventories today, and they are, because they got it back there in Babylon. It was Tishri was the beginning of the year, and so they would start all over again. So anyway, you get my point in that, you know, we're not to do this stuff. God says plainly not to do it, and yet we do it. And I have not ever, I mean, that was the best answer I ever got, but I'll tell you, at least in 10 or 12 times that I've asked people why you wear it, they don't know. They always say, I don't know. You know, everybody wears them, you know, so I wear it. Second Chronicles 34. Second Chronicles. So they just divided up today, part Babylon, part, you know, part of what God says and part of what was done in Babylon. Not to do any of these things. We're not to do anything to try to improve or change what God's law is. And we can't do anything better. And I've thought about this and thought about it and thought about it. We cannot make anything better. We make different fruits and vegetables and stuff, and we use artificial fertilizer, but it doesn't have the same nutrients, doesn't taste as good. We take our things and we pick them before they're ripe, and we put them in a truck, and we pull all the oxygen out, and we put nitrogen in it, because nitrogen stops it from ripening. And so then we bring that stuff halfway across the world, and then we eat it, and we have peaches that the seed splits in half, and it's coarse and rough and kind of wicked. So anyway, we're not to do the things that the world does. But so many times people just don't know better, and they lose contact with God over time until one day in their history they found it. Second Chronicles 34 and verse 14. And when they brought out the money that was brought into the house of the Lord, this is when they had come back, of course, from Babylon's captivity. They brought the money into the house of the Lord. Hilkiah the priest found a book of the law of the Lord given by Moses. And I think someone probably, when they were being attacked by Babylon, they probably buried it under some stones or something, you know. But anyway, Hilkiah goes in. He's the high priest. He goes in and he finds this book of the law. And he took the book to the king, 2 Chronicles in chapter 15 here. And Hilkiah, he answered and he said to Shaphan the scribe, I have found the book of the law in the house of the Lord. And Hilkiah delivered the book to Shaphan, and Shaphan carried the book to the king. And he brought the king word back again, saying, all that was committed to thy servants, they do it. And they have gathered together the money that was found in the house of the Lord and have delivered it into the hands of the overseers and to the hands of the workmen. The workmen were working without money. They found money, and they gave it to them, like they should. And Shaphan the scribe told the king, saying, Hilkiah the priest has given me a book. And Shaphan read it before the king, and it came to pass, when the king had heard the words of the law, he rent his clothes. And the king commanded Hilkiah and Eliakim, the son of Shaphan, and Abdon, the son of Micah, and Shaphan the scribe, and Ahaziah, a servant of the king, saying, go inquire of the Lord for me, and for them that are left in Israel and in Judah, concerning the words of the book that is found. For great is the wrath of the Lord that is poured out upon us, because our fathers have not kept the word of the Lord to do after all that is written in the book. So when he heard those words, he realized the reason we went into captivity, the reason that Israel's gone, the reason that we've suffered like we have, is because we just didn't do what this book said. It's a wise king. And Hilkiah and they that the king had appointed went to Huldah, the prophetess, the wife of Shallum, the son of Tikva, the son of Hazra, the keeper of the wardrobe. Now she dwelt in Jerusalem in the college, and they spoke to her to that effect. And she answered them, thus says the Lord God of Israel, tell the man that sent you to me. Thus says the Lord, behold, I will bring evil on this place and upon the inhabitants thereof, even all the curses that are written in the book which they have read before the king of Judah, because they've forsaken me. They've burned incense unto other gods, that they might provoke me to anger with all the works of their hands. I mean, it's just plain stupid to have an idol and burn incense to it. It's plain stupid. Can't they see it's a little tiny, you know, replica made out of clay or silver or something, you know? Therefore my wrath shall be poured out upon this place, and it shall not be quenched. And as for the king of Judah, who sent you to inquire of the Lord, you shall say this to him, thus says the Lord God of Israel, concerning the words which you have heard. Because your heart was tender, and you did humble yourself before God, when you heard his word against this place and against the inhabitants thereof, you humbled yourself before me, and you rent your clothes, and you wept before me, and I've even heard you also, says the Lord. Behold, I'll gather you unto your fathers. You shall be gathered to the grave in peace. Neither shall your eyes see all the evil that I'll bring upon this place and upon the inhabitants of the same. So they brought the word back to the king. And so the king gathered all the elders, and he gathered all of them together, and they were told about this. But my point in reading this is, do you understand that how God is, the mercy of God? He has made these proclamations, and these people disobeyed, and they deserved all of this. But one man says, we really messed up. I'm so sorry. He weeps and cries and says, I see it. I get it. And so his whole life, they prospered. They prospered for his whole life until he died. So the king, in verse 29, sent and gathered together all the elders of Judah and Jerusalem. And the king went up into the house of the Lord, and all the men of Judah and the inhabitants of Jerusalem and the priests and the Levites and all the people, great and small. And he read in the ears all of the words of the book of the covenant that was found in the house of the Lord. And the king stood in his place, and he made a covenant before the Lord to walk after the Lord, to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes with all his heart and with all his soul, and to perform the words of the covenant which are written in this book. Just stop for a minute and think. Did we make this covenant? Did we make this covenant? We made this covenant. The king stood in his place and made a covenant before the Lord to walk after the Lord, to keep his commandments and his testimonies and his statutes with all his heart and with all his soul, and to perform the words of the covenant which are written in the book. And he caused all that were present in Jerusalem and Benjamin to stand to it. And the inhabitants of Jerusalem did according to the covenant of God, the God of their fathers. And Josiah took away all the abominations out of the countries that pertained to the children of Israel, and made all that were present in Israel to serve, even to serve the Lord their God. And all his days they departed not from following the Lord, the God of their fathers. man, you can see how important it is to have leaders that will follow God. He went all over, all of Israel, everybody that lived up north and everybody who lived down south. They all obeyed God, and they prospered because of it. You know, why is this story recorded? Why do we have these kinds of details here? Don't you think it's written for us? Don't you think that it's written for us to learn from? It's a story for us, written as an example. Even though the entire world has forgotten God, even though the media mock him today and they put him down and they ridicule him, even though our president of the United States doesn't like him and doesn't want to have anything to do with him, we are not to forget. Hold on to what we promise. Hold on to what we know. Keep studying this book and learning about it. We are to know what it says. It's absolutely amazing how one man can do something the right way. And then others see it, and they see the good fruits, but they often don't continue in that same way. I remember Jim Adrianos. He was my apprentice for a while, and he worked for me. He's a really enthusiastic man about God and his church and so on. And he told me he went to visit his relatives, and he said that one of his uncles there said about his newfound beliefs, he says, "Well, balance in all things, you know." Balance in all things. So, you know, don't go too far, you know. And that's kind of what has happened to the church in our last age, you know. Balance, we want to balance things out. And it reminds me of an illustration I read about three groups of sheep, you know. The first group decided they were going to follow the shepherd no matter where or how he led them. You know, and they just wanted to follow him. Just like Christ said, "My sheep hear my voice, and they follow me." And that's what it says in chapter 14 about those in the resurrection. They follow Christ, okay? But second group wanted nothing to do with the shepherd, not at all. They wanted to live their lives their own way and don't get involved in my life. And they decide deliberately to walk away from him. You know, these are the pagans, the atheists in our society today. They, you know, Dawkins and those guys, you know, the atheists, so famous, and these writers that don't like God, don't want God. So anyway, they don't want to follow. But there's a third group that they like the shepherd, all right. They want to hang out with him. But they just don't want to get too close to him. You know, they want a little bit of distance because they want to keep their options open, you understand? They want to be able to, you know, kind of feed on what grass they want to feed on when they want to feed. You know, they don't want to be told. They want to nibble a little bit of this and nibble a little bit of that. And, you know, kind of like Solomon did. And, you know, as George Orwell once said, "On the whole, human beings want to be good, but not too good and not quite all the time." That's kind of true, isn't it? That's kind of true of it. That's the era we live in. That's Laodicea. That's what's being described here. The third group of people are people that kind of, you know, they want God and so on, but they just want him to keep his distance a little bit so they can still have their life. And so when God says something, or, you know, like the three times a year or the Sabbath test booklet, you know, when they hear something like that, they should immediately go, "Of course." But they know, "Don't interfere with my life. This part over here is mine, and going to church on Sabbath, that's yours. You get the holy days and you get the tithe, but you're not full obedience, you know." And so this is the people that want to keep balance, you know, just not too much, not all the time. So they have a kind of loose connection with the shepherd, and they're the ones, though, that end up often wandering off, and the ones that often become lost to one degree or another. They're close enough to the shepherd that they feel secure. You know, I have a relationship with God, but everybody has a relationship with God. Some good, some bad, some mediocre, you understand? It's the whole thing about this Protestant term, having a relationship with Jesus. And so, but Satan has a relationship with him. You understand? You have to define that relationship in terms of our obedience to God. It's not just a relationship. It's a relationship in which we fear him, we read his book, and we do what he says in it. And so, anyway, this is the era we live in right now. This is it, last era. Live in a world of their own choosing, and they're not absolutely certain about the truth of God. As one person said to me, well, that can be debated. They don't want to debate, you know, because they didn't know. But they wanted to be able to say, well, all that could be debated, you know. And I remember that, we went to, I think you were there too, Terry, that we went to that Bible study in that one of the larger groups, the largest group in the churches. We went to their Bible study. It was about prophecy. And they had two men up there, and they would take questions from the audience, and the one man would answer, and the other man would give a different answer. They had different answers, and it was really funny how they, one of the things they really liked to use is, we don't know. And they took pride in saying that they didn't know, because it made them feel actually intellectually superior to admit that they didn't know. But I'm sitting there going, we used to know. You know, we always knew before. When did we lose it? Where did it go? You know, where is it? And but this I don't know thing is just taken over everywhere, I think, you know. So anyway, let's go over to Ecclesiastes 9. Ecclesiastes 9. Taking a little bit too much time here. Getting too excited. I don't think Jim Adrianus' uncle would like me. 9:12. For man also knows not his time, as the fishes that are taken in an evil net, and as the birds that are caught in the snare, so are the sons of men snared in an evil time, when it falls on them suddenly. There is an evil time coming because we have neglected the things written in this book. And it's going to catch us like a snare. And we're going to wonder why. Where's God when a Katrina happens? You know, as they practice voodoo down there. Mm-hmm. You know? But that's my point, of course. Look, 1 Timothy 4. First Timothy 4, this is really supposed to be God's church. We say it is. We name ourselves after him. But notice what Paul said to Timothy here. He was not afraid to take a stand. 1 Timothy 4, verse 11. And these things command and teach. Let no man despise your youth, but be an example of the believers in word, and in conversation or conduct, in charity, in spirit, in faith, in purity, till I come, give attendance to reading, to exhortation, to doctrine. This is so important that he's making an emphasis here. He's leaving a man in place and he's saying, look, here's what you have to do. Neglect not the gift that's in you, which was given you by prophecy and by the laying on of the hands of the presbytery. Meditate on these things. Give yourself wholly to them, that their profiting may appear to all. Take heed unto yourself and to the doctrine, and continue in them. In doing this, you shall both save yourself and those that hear you. I'm asking you to hear me, because terrible times are coming ahead. Isaiah, powerful. But he told Timothy, Paul did, that he was to be an example to the brethren. And, you know, we are ministers and we make mistakes because we're human, and that's to be expected. But we never move off of this issue of exhorting and reading and teaching and keeping people straight on doctrine. We don't ever do that. And what follows next is Israel, when they forgot God, they were stricken by natural disasters. And it says in Isaiah 1, the vision of Isaiah, the son of Amos, which he saw concerning Judah and Jerusalem in the days of Uzziah, Jotham, Ahaz, and Hezekiah, king of Judah, Israel's rebellion is titled. Hear, O heavens, and give ear, O earth, for the Lord has spoken. I have nourished and brought up children, and they've rebelled against me. The ox knows his owner, he says. The ass knows his master's crib. But Israel does not know, and my people don't consider. And we were in Guyana, and you remember down the streets, there would be cows walking down the streets, and ducks and geese and everything else walking out, just wide open in the streets. And I remember with a deacon, we were looking at that, and he said to me, he says, they know their owner. They know where to go home. They know where their stall is. You know, we forget, you know. A sinful nation, he says, a people laden with iniquity, a seed of evildoers, children that are corruptors and that have forsaken the Lord and have provoked the Holy One of Israel unto anger, and they're gone away backwards. Well, should you be stricken anymore? Do you think you'll revolt more and more? The whole head is sick and the whole heart is faint. And from the sole of the foot even to the head, there's no soundness in it but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. Putrefying sore is an ugly thing, it really is. They have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. And your country is desolate, your cities are going to be burnt with fire, and your land strangers devour it in your presence, and it's desolate and overthrown by strangers, you know. We have had 151 big disasters this year, in case you haven't noticed it. They've had floods, and they've had fires and hurricanes and tornadoes and quakes. They had actually 569 tornadoes this year. Our people could turn to God, and all this would go away. Instead, yesterday, we signed an executive order, and the president is taking control of the climate change policies in America. You know, so he's going to be in charge of that now instead of the states. He's taken away the states' rights to handle these things. And do you think that's going to help? Do you think any other legislation is going to help? No. But who controls the weather? Our Creator controls the weather. He controls it. And we could make a change, and we could have rain in due season. We could have no more hurricanes, no more tornadoes, but we're being hit over and over and over. Wildfires in California, then in Colorado, then floods right afterwards. You know, it's terrifying what is happening, and when I think about what's going to happen, I'm scared to death, to tell you the truth. But we've got to make up our mind who we're going to serve right now before it all happens. And I can just hear the answers as things get worse. You know, their answer is this: I don't know. But we do know. It's God that controls it. What about you? What about if someone asks you a Bible question? You know, not always easy to understand 2 Peter 3:16. You know, in all these epistles, he speaks of things in which some things are hard to be understood, which they that are unlearned and unstable rest as they do the other scriptures to their own destruction. And this is what they've done with Paul's scriptures. They have wrested them to their own destruction, and they don't know it. They made him say something he never wanted them to say. And what's more, he tells us, look, shun profane and vain babblings. Shun that stuff, because it's just going to increase more and more to unrighteousness. And so what is the church doing now? We're going after this idea and that idea and others' ideas and so on. We're not proving it. We're just accepting a lot of this stuff. And it makes us unique, better, or something like that. I don't know what motivates these people, but right now I see people going in every direction possible, it seems, you know. But they should be able to give an answer from the Bible. But I've heard people that I've talked to, and they say, well, it's complicated, you know, and they have, you know, this, you have to read this book or that book or some other book to understand. It's not complicated. It says very obviously and plainly what our responsibility is. And so I ask you to even give our literature to other people to read and just challenge them, just show me where it's wrong, you know. Just, you know the Bible enough to show me where it's wrong. And if anybody finds where our stuff is wrong, we correct it. And we've done this a couple of times already. And we will do it in the future. So I'm saying to people that hear this, that get on the mailing list, give a DVD out. Give a booklet out to somebody else, because you are helping your brethren. I know this is true. Sabbath test is true. Three times a year is true. We didn't just make this up. We looked it up, checked it up, double-checked, triple-checked, and we went through it, and it's absolutely true. You want to help somebody, help them not break the fourth commandment. Help them not give an offering on atonement when only the high priest gave an atonement. Do you understand that we're sinning when we do this? And it's blatant and it's big. And so we shouldn't do it. And we should help our brethren. Don't be afraid. Do you remember what Paul said to Timothy? Don't be afraid of them. You may not be a long-time church member, but you know the truth. And don't stray from it. And keep hitting it and hitting it hard, you know. And we should be like the Bereans, who was said of Paul. They studied every day to see if these things were true or not. Do we study every day to see if things are true or not? Or do we just, if we like it, we accept it. If we don't like it, we don't accept it. What are we doing? What are we doing? We need to be getting into the book. We need to do this. You know, so anyway, people have their various reasons and so on. And they, you know, have churches that, you know, want to follow Mr. Armstrong and so on. And I love him, and I think we stand on his shoulders. I wouldn't be anywhere if I didn't have everything he taught us. But we can polish a facet from time to time, and that's not hurting anything. But, you know, people will actually say that you have to follow him. And they quote Revelation 3 and 10 and 11, where it says that you have to hold fast. But what it says is, you've kept my word in quiet strength. It says you've obeyed my message and endured. We're talking about obeying God's message, not some man's message. You know, study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman, a good workman that needs not be ashamed. So I'm saying, let's this day make a commitment that we're going to study sincerely, and we're going to strive to do it on a daily basis and not just believe some man. We're going to prove what we read one way or the other so that we know exactly where Exodus and Deuteronomy is. You know, that's so valuable to do that, you know. And I say this because if we prove it for ourselves and if we strive to live it, we're going to have God's approval. And we can be certain that we are a part of his plan. And we can be certain that Christ isn't going to respond to us like this. Oh, you? I don't know.